not so that we can, you know, interact with the ministry. I'd like to take this opportunity, honorable members, to welcome our new DG, Mr. Nhleko. You're welcome to have met some of us, if not all of us, yesterday, but we never actually interacted. This is the first time that we'll be, you know, exchanging ideas and chatting way forward for the department. I'd again like to take this opportunity to thank the acting DG, Mr. Morotoba. We have worked very well with you and your team, and you just need to prove the DG how you manage to make it, because usually there are tensions between, you know, committees and the department, and we have never experienced that in this committee, and thanks to your leadership, Jose. We need to build on that. And knowing who you are and where you come from and your experiences as a manager, I don't see us going into a reverse gear. Thank you very much. You're welcome. I'll take this opportunity to give to the department to brief us about the MTG.
No, thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson and the Honorable Members. Good morning, and thanks for welcoming us in the manner in which you did. We hope to do our best in strengthening working relations between ourselves and the portfolio committee at all material times. In the delegation this morning, we are short of three deputy directors general. Mr. Mkhonto has had to, and Mr. Mkhonto and Mr. Seruwe, some contacts from the Unemployment Insurance Fund, and Mr. Seruwe from the Compensation Fund, they've had to attend to other matters involving board meetings and so on. The same also goes for Ms. Sianda Ngawe, our Deputy Director General responsible for inspection and enforcement services, Honorable Chair. We will cover, nevertheless, the section in the presentation regarding inspection and the enforcement services. I would ask members of the delegation to also introduce themselves. I don't want to make an assumption that they are all known to yourselves and so on. My name is Nkosinathi Nhleko. I've assumed an assignment as the Director General for the Department of Labor.
Thanks, DG. My name is Sam Morotoba, the Deputy Director General responsible for Public Employment Services.
I'm Les Kettle, that's Deputy Director General responsible for Labor Policy. Thank you.
Lim Pasha, Deputy Director General responsible for Corporate Services.
Good morning. My name is Vikas Sirkisun. I'm the Acting Chief Information Officer at the Department of Labor.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Tembi Moleko, Acting Chief Director, Human Resources for the Compensation Fund.
My name is Nolukolo Sigaba. I provide support to the Director General.
Good morning. My name is Nompumelelo Lomnyonyo, Chief of Staff, Labor Ministry.
Good morning. My name is Ola Mnene in the Ministry's office, to the Minister.
Good morning. My name is Gabriel Mutiva, Communication.
Morning, everyone. My name is Dixon Kenikaya Mukono, Parliamentary Liaison Officer.
Can we do the same with the members? I'm Alec Nchavele, chairperson of the committee on labor.
Eric Nyagamba from the ANC.
Zokumasungula from the ANC, but just before the DA comes in, I'm chairperson. Chairperson. How long are we going to be acting like in Hollywood?
I'm Josh Benamo. I'm the member of this committee. Thank you.
I completely missed that reference to Hollywood. I don't know what it's all about, but I'm Ian Ollis and I'm from the Democratic Alliance.
Thank you very much. Before we even continue, the Hollywood issue. As we know, we had it was a full Hollywood show. Now there are some few dropped out of Hollywood. But we still have people acting, and this is a challenge to the it finally landed. It took some time. That is your first challenge, DG, that you need to put an end to this Hollywood.
Chairperson, thanks very much. Thanks very much for that. We hope in the next 2-3 months we should be able to at least either appear before you or brief you in one form or the other about how we are dealing with that situation. We have begun attending to it, sir. So at least let me just leave it at that for now. Chair, thanks. The presentation that we are making today is going to be segmented into two parts. The first part, Honorable Chair, is basically an overview of where South Africa as a country stands insofar as the Millennium Development Goals. So in essence, the report, the presentation that we're making is essentially an extraction out of the country report that has been recently done. But also the second part will focus on the specific sort of areas that relate to the mandate of the Department of Labor. So both the public employment services, our labor policy branch, as well as our inspection and enforcement branch will also speak to the specific aspects of the Millennium Development Goals. So by way of background, as a country, we are expected to report on the progress towards attaining your MDGs as agreed by the heads of states and adopted in the declaration of the United Nations General Assembly of September 2000. Secondly, is that the organ of state called Statistics SA is responsible for official statistics, for coordination thereof, and as well as the drafting of the country report. Thirdly, is that the Millennium Development Goals country report has been released, and the Minister and the Presidency National Planning Commission has made various presentation to legislatures in March 2011. The fourth point is that ourselves as the Department of Labor, we have been assigned to the group that deals with poverty and hunger indicators, which is the Millennium Development Goal 1, which is the eradication of extreme poverty and hunger. Apart from participating in the sectoral groups, sectoral working groups, I'm sorry, government departments are expected to provide statistics at their disposal relevant to the Millennium Development Goals indicators. And as departments extreme poverty and hunger. The indicators were mainly available from Statistics SA and the Social Services Department. So we then have a tabulation of about 8 or 9 of those. One is the question of the proportion of population of the population below $1 per day poverty gap ratio, the share of poorest quintile in national consumption. Thirdly, the growth rate of gross domestic product per person employed. The fourth point being employment to population ratio. The fifth point being the proportion of employed people living below $1 per day. The sixth point being proportion of own account and contributing family workers in total employment. The seventh area is the prevalence of underweight children under 5 years of age. Eighth point being the proportion of population below minimum level of dietary energy consumption. The slide before you, Chairperson, is an indication of the relevant Millennium Development Goals relevant to the Department of Labor. So Millennium Development Goal 1, eradication of extreme poverty and hunger, is relevant to the Department of Labor. Millennium Development Goal 3, promotion of gender equality and empowerment of women, relevant to Department of Labor. MDG 6, combating HIV, AIDS, malaria, and other diseases. MDG 7, ensuring environmental sustainability. MDG 8, developing global partnership for development. Those are the areas that we will hone in as and when we go on with this presentation. But those are direct sort of linkages to MDGs from the mandate of the Department of Labor. The key result areas, insofar as our strategic plan 2011 to 2016, consists of 9. Key result areas, and these are specific matters, and we will show in the presentation as to how these key result areas relate to the MDGs. The key result area 1 is contribution to employment creation, 2, promotion of equity in the labor market, protecting vulnerable workers as a third point, 4th point, strengthening multilateral and bilateral relations. Strengthening social protection is the fifth key result area. Sixth key result area is the promotion of sound labor relations. Strengthening the capacity of labor market institutions is the seventh key result area. Monitoring the impact of legislation, key result 8. Strengthening the institutional capacity of the Department of Labor. Now, insofar as MDG 1, which is the eradication of extreme poverty and hunger, there are two targets that have been set. One is halving the proportion of people whose income is less than $1 per day. 1.2 is the achieving full and productive employment and decent work for all. Now, the relevant question is how ourselves as the Department of Labor are contributing to the MDG targets. In this regard, insofar as MDG 1, say, 4 key result areas of the Department of Labor speak to that particular question. One is the contribution to employment creation, protecting vulnerable workers, strengthening social protection, promotion of sound labor relations. Those are the 4 areas in which ourselves as the Department of Labor do make a contribution directly to a Millennium Development Goal 1. Insofar as MDG 3, promotion of gender equality and empowerment of women, a key result area 2 of our department is around the promotion of equity in the labor market. And insofar as MDG 6, contribute through Key Result Area 4, which is strengthening multilateral and bilateral relations. Now, this slide is a reflection of the progress that is being registered insofar as the first goal as well as the indicators as reflected upon earlier on. The first portion shows the proportion of population living below $1 per day. Now, the statistics show that in year 2000, 11.3%, we had 11.3% of our people living below $1 per day. And that in year 2006, that figure was then reduced to 5%. And the actual target for 2015 is 5.7. And therefore we can indeed say that this particular target has been achieved. The poverty gap ratio stood at 3.2% in 2000, and that has been reduced to 1.1% in 2006. And the target for 2015 stands at 1.6, so that's also one MDG that has been achieved. Your poverty gap ratio also in the year 2000 stood at 5.4%. In 2006, that figure stood at 2.3, and the target for 2015 is 2.7. Essentially, that target has also been achieved. So that's the general overview, Chairperson, of where the country is insofar as a progress that is being registered around the issue of the Millennium Development Goals. The following section is then the specific aspect of our programs speaking to the MDGs as the Department of Labor. We'll start off with the Inspection and Enforcement Services. And I'll ask Deputy Director General, Mr. Sam Morotova, to take us through that.
Thanks very much, DG, and thanks for the opportunity, Honorable Chairperson, to present. Maybe, can I request that the electricity is going to switch off the plug, the cable. Okay, thanks.
Apologies, technology is not happy.
Okay. Yeah. Now, the battery was going down. We didn't want this today. Chairperson, under the Millennium Development Goal 3, promoting gender inequality and empower women, in terms of result area, which is our dole contribution, the Inspection and Enforcement Services has done a number of things which we can say as the department that we did contribute towards this target. Firstly, when it comes to the Employment Equity Act, since its implementation, there have been a number of inspections that were conducted. The inspectors did conduct inspections on procedural compliance. There are cases that are reported on alleged unfair discrimination. Some are referred to the CCMA in case where the department cannot address them. Now, the information in relation to each individual year, and this is the issue that the DG was raising, that we forward this statistics to Stats SA. Every year in the annual report of the department, you will notice the number of cases that are reported that are then investigated and so on. It's just that for the purposes of this presentation, and depending on the term, the team could not come up with the consolidation. But going forward, for a specific report, and when we make our contribution to the Stats SA, the information over a number of years will then be tabulated and forwarded to the Stats SA. But you can check our annual report as we report on a daily basis. And the minister, I think, yesterday did speak to some of those targets that we have achieved in terms of inspections. And we did conduct a number of DG reviews, and we also do report on especially the employment equity report does give you a reflection in terms of how the levels of our workplaces are changing in terms of trying to reflect the demographics of our country. In relation to gender equality, again, there has been technical assistance guidelines that were developed to assist in the implementation of employment equity, and we have conducted a number of roadshows aimed at creating awareness and to assist employers in compiling employment equity reports. And we do have an online system that has been developed to assist employers to file with the department their employment equity reports. Again, continued in terms of eradicating extreme poverty and hunger. Our KRA Key Result Area 4, Protection of Vulnerable Workers, does also contribute to this. Again, within the agriculture and domestic workers, we continue to identify a number of vulnerable workers that our inspections then target, and there has been a number of sectoral determinations. These are ways in which the department, in terms of the Labor Relations Act, publishes conditions of employment and wages that must be paid by employers to protect those workers that do not necessarily have the relevant collective bargaining forums. And we have done so in relation to domestic workers and a number of other sectors. And in the past 3 years, we have also identified areas such as construction, malls and in the hospitality sector, etc., that we have targeted in terms of blitz inspections. And we have also piloted a number of awareness campaigns, especially in the agricultural sector, to try and highlight the importance of health and safety to make sure that we minimize cases and incidences of occupational injuries and diseases, and thereby minimize the compensation aspect. In relation to ensure environmental stability, Millennium Development Goal 7, our contribution, again, as the DG said, is in relation to KRA 5, strengthening social protection. And again, under this KRA, the OHS regulations have been promulgated, and we have worked with other departments such as environmental affairs, mineral resources, etc., in ensuring the protection of the environment and workers. And we also participate in technical committees of experts, both at regional and international level within the ILO, to look at codes and conventions that will guide the world in so far as occupational health and safety is concerned. Under Program 3, which is Public Employment Services, again taking MDG 1, our contribution is in relation to CARE 1. The targets have been highlighted. I won't repeat them. Now, in relation to MDG 3, promoting gender equality and empowerment women, we also contribute again under CARE 2, which is promoting equity in the labor market. And as part of achieving this aspect, our contribution to date has been partly the development of the bill, which is before NEDLAC. And just to also highlight the one aspect which is often missed is that we have had the Skills Development Act, which was split into two. The one section of the Act was transferred to the Department of Education, and the other section of the Act remains with the Department of Labor, the Employment Services side. So we're sitting with one legislation that is governing processes, and because of the President's proclamation, functions that are in two departments, and the instructions that we have been given and the guidance that we are receiving from the state law advisors is to craft and split that legislation in such a manner that will ensure that we do not disrupt current programs, hence the process of the development of the bills and maintenance of the current employment services functions that are still governed by the employment the Skills Development Act, which a bigger size has been transferred to education. Again, just to illustrate the Department of Labor's contribution towards employment creation, as at the end of December, starting from the 1st of April 2010, in terms of job seekers and those that were placed in opportunities, we've had 497,000 work seekers that were registered in throughout our 125 labor centers, and 324,000 were registered with and for matching with the various that is 324 opportunities were also registered, and out of the 497,000 job seekers that reported for registration, 401,000 of those job seekers were either referred for career guidance, for work placement opportunities, some were referred to UIF benefits compensation, and the bulk of them were referred to the skills development section in the Department of Education for training, as honorable members may be aware that that function is no longer under our control. And there was a proportion of people that were assisted in terms of the SPECS system. This is the system that was developed with the assistance of various institutions of higher learning to assess people's potential for placement in certain opportunities, and we've had 13,000 assessed, and of those 8,200 were able to were successfully placed in specific jobs that were listed as part of the 324,000 opportunities. The bulk of them are in the high end, and the problem that we continue to experience is that the majority of job seekers registered, some do not even have a standard 10, hence the large registration, I mean, referral to skills development. As of December 2010, 1,200 companies registered opportunities on the system, 950 private employment agencies were registered, and also there were some opportunities mainly in the EPWP that were also registered, and we also received 161 applications for work permits, and 19 companies were also assisted in the training layoff intervention, and 6,300 workers benefited from the training layoff scheme. Just to give you an indication on the work seekers placed, you have a slide depicting the opportunities registered and those that were placed per province. The next one gives you an indication of the number of companies that applied through the CCMA as part of the economic crisis, and as a number of projects that were related to the World Cup came to an end, applied for assistance. Measure of a total of 19 companies assisted, and a total of 6,000 workers were involved, and a total of almost 40 million rand has been allocated towards those companies, mainly to pay for the salaries of those workers. That is 50% of the salaries of workers that are making themselves eligible for the training layoff scheme. As honorable members may know, workers who do not avail themselves for training under the scheme normally will not receive a cent. They will just be laid off. But those that avail themselves will receive 50%, and the employers agreed to pay the other 50% towards social wage, that is their medical, their pension fund, and so on. And because of the incentive associated with the scheme, we've seen a large number of workers opting for training in this process. And this is part of the 2.4 billion that was set aside by both the Unemployment Insurance Fund and the National Skills Fund. The scheme currently is managed by education, and there are issues around the handover and making sure that we take on a large number of other companies that are applying to have access to the scheme. Insofar as designated groups, we have allocated we received an allocation of 681,000 during the 10-11 financial year. And of this amount, at the end of the third quarter, 403,000 was transferred to councils that assist in the placement of people with disability and promoting their reintegration in employment, and a total of 1,020 were registered, and of those, 511 were placed by this council. Insofar as assisting companies to achieve world-class status, apologies for the heading. The slides that we distributed had a slight typos, which we corrected in the slide. The issue here, or our contribution, relates to providing assistance to companies, mainly through an entity such as Productivity SA and our social plan intervention. And so far, we, as at the end of December, within the first three quarters, 280 companies were assisted through the Workplace Challenge Program, 83 companies were assisted through the Turnaround Solution forums, which are mainly aimed at promoting dialogue within companies to look at things like wastage and so on to change the situation in companies. And we also had 2,245 SMS behind in relation to intellectual properties, and 8,200 jobs were saved through the social intervention program, social plan program. And in relation to women assisted to access employment services, again, because we, for the purposes of reporting, we have to dissect these numbers. This slide just gives you a breakdown of those women who are part of job seekers that were registered per province that were assisted. And the next slide gives you just a breakdown of young people who were assisted in terms of placement opportunities. And the next one gives you a breakdown of people with disabilities that were also assisted. And this was mainly through the programs, the placement, including those that we fund the national councils. And I will hand over to Mr. Kettledust to talk to the labor relations area.
Thank you, Chairperson, honorable members. The first slide there shows that an assessment that we have made of sectoral determinations covering vulnerable workers in South Africa indicates that the real wages of workers have increased between 2001 and 2010, particularly the wages of domestic and farm workers. Employment in sectors covered by minimum wage legislation also grew significantly over this period at around 2.9% per annum, whilst output grew by 4.6%. Overall, it shows that employment in South Africa of workers covered by minimum wage legislation grew at a rate of 2.9% per annum, from nearly 3.5 million in 2001 to just over 4 million in 2007. The next slide depicts that improvement that I've talked about. If one just looks at domestic, which is the second item on the left, if you look at ultra poor, you will see that in 2001 it was 45.3%. Now the improvement is shown in 2007, where it has come down to 36.6%. Similarly, as a result of that, the non-poor, again in regard to domestic, you will see that in 2001 it was 22.5%, and in 2007 it is up to 34.6%. So that clearly indicates the improvement that has been made there in those households. The next slide is again linking to MDG 1, our contribution to employment creation. The Labor Relations Act that we administer allows the Minister of Labor to extend collective agreements concluded by bargaining councils to non-parties, thereby also ensuring that those workers that are not in trade as party to the bargaining councils also benefit from the improvement in conditions, the improvement in remuneration that are negotiated in those bargaining councils. If those agreements were not extended, the likelihood is that those people would not benefit from the improvements that are concluded in bargaining councils. So by extending collective agreements to non-parties, it also covers vulnerable workers who normally would have been excluded by these wage increases, and very importantly, social security benefits like pension funds and medical aid schemes. Over a period of 13 years, the average wage settlement rate in South Africa was around 8%, and that rate was more than the average inflation rate of 2%. The average wage settlement has been higher than the inflation rate by 2%, and this clearly indicates that workers' living standards in South Africa has been improved gradually. The key thing here to remember is that when wages just keep pace with the rate of inflation, you are not having an improvement to your standard of living. You're basically just going back to where you were a year ago. So the increases above inflation rates assist in workers and families improving their standard of living. The next slide indicates that over the period of 5 years, the average wage settlement rate in bargaining councils have been for skilled workers 9%, semi-skilled workers 9%, and unskilled workers 9%. Now, what is important about that is it shows that the wage gap isn't being maintained. Because if we want to close the wage gap, then unskilled workers should, on average, have received higher wage increases than semi-skilled and skilled. If you maintain it at the same level, then the wage gap will not go away. So again, it also shows that the lowest wage income of unskilled workers in South Africa compared to the $1 per day was $9 per day. So we were way above the $1 per day. And this indicates that the low wage income for the lowest paid worker in the bargaining council system across all sectors is above the $1 per day. So we are making an improvement in regard to dealing with extreme poverty and hunger. The next slide is in regard to the promotion of gender equality and empowerment of women. Of course, in this area, our work in the promotion of equity in the labor market includes that we create a conducive working environment for women participation and empowerment. And in order to achieve that, we have implemented the Employment Equity Act, its regulations, the codes of good practice and technical assistance guidelines that promotes equity in workplaces by promoting equal opportunities and fair treatment in employment through the elimination of unfair discrimination and implementing affirmative action measures to redress the disadvantages in employment experienced by designated groups, that is, black people, women, and people with disabilities, and to ensure their equitable representation in workplaces. The next slide is a continuation of that, where there has been progress in terms of representation of women in positions with decision-making powers, and an analysis of our employment equity reports over the last period shows that at the top management level, women constituted 18.2% in 2008, with a marginal improvement to 19% in 2010 of all positions at that level. At the senior management level, similarly, women constituted 28.3% in 2008, and again, there's a 1 percentage point improvement in 2010 of all the positions at that level. Not major improvements, but moving in the right direction. In the area of MDG 6, the department, in order to assist both employers and employees on how to manage the impact of HIV and AIDS in workplaces, have promulgated HIV and AIDS Code of Good Practice and its Technical Assistance Guidelines. The Technical Assistance Guidelines were published in 2000 and 2001, respectively, with some adjustments to that, and as well the key principles covered by both the Code and the Technical Assistance Guidelines have been made available. The elimination of unfair discrimination based on HIV status, dealing with HIV testing, confidentiality and disclosure of HIV AIDS status, and how to provide equitable employee benefits have also been made available and are being implemented. Now, I think the DG is going to take over the conclusion. Thanks, Chairperson. That is the contribution of Program 4 to those MDGs. Thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Kettledas. Now, just in terms of the conclusion of the report or the presentation, there are a number of levels that we thought we should highlight. Firstly, is that after all the countries in the world have actually contributed or submitted their reports, at international level, the United Nations does a consolidation and then produces an assessment that indicates how far internationally we are moving. And at a different level, that is at an African level, the same exercise was done just to measure how Africa as a continent is moving towards the achievement of these goals against other continents. But again, at the third level, was a consolidation and an assessment that was done by the minister in the presidency to look at how South Africa as a country is moving towards the achievement of those Millennium Development Goals. Now, at an international level, in terms of the assessment of the progress made so far, the World Bank released a report after looking at a number of reports submitted and made the following assessment, and we just extracted some extracts out of the World Bank report. In the main, basically, the assessment of the African continent or African report is that our results are mixed in our attempt to achieve these goals. And secondly, they raise the issue of food, fuel, and financial crisis experienced during the last 2 years as measures that have, or some of those aspects that have actually seriously impacted, especially on the developing countries, from achieving or making a lot of progress towards overcoming mainly poverty, improvements towards access to education, and efforts of trying to bring women into work and the mainstream of the economy. Thirdly, they then recommend that there should be some redoubling of efforts, especially if we are to achieve by 2015 the target set in the Millennium Development Goals. And in the main, they also recommend an allocation of resources from the World Bank to help organizations, NGOs, and governments within the developing countries so as to assist them to achieve those goals. And also, they recommended an allocation of about 8.3 billion rand, which with a zero interest rate, mainly to boost agricultural support, especially in Africa, the East and South Asia, so that we can achieve this millennium goals. And we did not go into the extent of the breakdown of the monies allocated to date to different countries, but I think it will be important for honorable members to have access to such reports so that at a global level we can, as we debate around the Millennium Goals, we can have a sense of what is happening at that level. Now, within the African continent, as part of marking the first 5 years or looking at progress and looking at the remaining 5 years of the MDG, the evidence to date shows that since 2000 there has been some progress, especially in terms of primary education enrollment, childhood immunization, stemming the spread of HIV, AIDS, TB, and malaria, and the empowerment of that is gender empowerment, including representation of women in decision making. So these are the areas where broadly within the continent there's been progress. However, there's also a reflection on poverty reduction, employment, and health-related goals that in this area, as a continent, we have not achieved much. The results have been disappointing, and that there is still a high degree of inequality, especially when it comes to access to social services in Africa, especially aspects such as education and health. Rural areas were cited as some of those areas where within the continent there are still a lot of challenges. Whilst there's also an acknowledgement that within the developing countries in the region, there is an indication that some countries within the African region are addressing some of those aspects, and that there is still a high population growth relative to other regions. That is, if we are to compare the African continent with other continents, and that within the African continent, the development challenges confronting the African continent are unique and as such will still require a lot of expenditure and resources, especially if we are to overcome those challenges. And if we are to then reflect at the third level, which is South Africa, against all the 8 Millennium Goals, the report compiled by the Presidency makes a number of reflections. Firstly, it cites the strength that we have in terms of infrastructure, the private sector that we have that is well developed, and the stable macroeconomy basically arising from our management of economy, our labor relations, and so on, that has developed. Those give us a major strength, but the Presidency report still cites areas of weaknesses that we need to continue to address as a country, one of them being education, healthcare, and the prevalence of HIV/AIDS, and that we have not achieved in the main. Although, I mean, if you take health and so on, whilst we have witnesses compared to other African countries, we have done much. Although we still need to do a lot, and one of the major issues which the country and the president has put in the forefront is the question of employment, because this is one area which we have not achieved, and that is why all departments have tuned their strategic plans to try and address the issue of employment, because the report acknowledges that we did not achieve much. On the inflation, I think as a country, we are not doing bad, and in terms of poverty reduction, the country makes a lot of reference to that is the country report makes a lot of reference to a number of interventions that we've made, especially in the provision of housing, water, electricity, and sanitation, to address poverty, and that I think Mr. Kettledas did touch on the question of the dollar-based purchasing power and people living either above the $1 wage, and those are areas that we have achieved. And some of the broad actions cited in the report, which the country committed itself to achieve are around the macroeconomic policies that we will continue to maintain and stabilize that, and secondly, to improve the national capacity to monitor and report on the MDGs. And I think this is important because whilst we produce annual reports, I think the challenge has been to make sure that we are able to work closely with Statistics South Africa to extract in a comprehensive manner and on an annual basis, or if the reports are submitted on maybe 3-year cycles, that we are able to provide a comprehensive reports as a country that Statistics SA can put together, and that the report we submit to the United Nations gives a true picture of what is happening in the country. And I think the efforts that the Ministry for Monitoring and Evaluation is taking, including what Parliament is initiating, is going to help and make sure that the country report that South Africa presents is reflective of what is happening on the ground, and that we can verify the information that is submitted, and that as a country, the whole question of investing in the infrastructure, I think, and making sure that we involve the private sector, the community-based organizations, and the non-governmental organizations is something that, as a country, we have embraced and will continue to work in. And I think the question of SSS8 is something that I've also indicated that. Hopefully, the monitoring and evaluation will make sure that we strengthen our report. So, DG and Honorable Chairperson, like we said, we contribute as part of a bigger team, because the Millennium Development Goals are international, and our contribution is just but a fraction of what South Africa submits as part of that report. And I'll hand over to the DG.
Thank you very much, Shay. Thanks.
Thanks, DG, and your team. When we're introducing ourselves, I realized that the support staff, part of our team, did not introduce themselves. And these are the most important people in this team. DG, because they are the engine of the committee. Without the secretary, the research, and the other support staff, we will run endlessly. We'll never rest. So these are the people who are making our work a bit more easier and lighter.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. My name is Luvo, the committee secretary.
Good morning. My name is Ibamgela Mtunjeni, committee assistant.
You are not welded to this.
Morning, everyone. My name is Cindy. I'm the researcher for the committee.
Good morning, Baba Luanganga, and secretary to the committee.
Good morning.
Good morning, I'm Zane Lekito from the Auditor General.
This is the team, DG. So you will be getting correspondences and requests from some of the team members. Don't be surprised when you get something from them. Thank you very much. It's honorable members, this is the presentation. It's clear and straightforward. But I just want to say that for us to achieve all these goals, we cannot do them on our own as the Department of Labor. But we are leaving those that are said to be belonging, you know, to us. We can only do them through other people or in collaboration with other people. So working with other departments and us again in supporting you through working with other committees like the Committee on Mining, on Mineral Resources, Department of Higher Education. Economic development is very important here in the sense that we're even looking at not only what is happening in South Africa, but in the, you know, in Southern Africa. There are lots of things that are affecting us as the Department of Labor, trade across the border, you know. What is our role in that? You know, companies that are moving into South Africa or are having partnerships with South Africa, are they adhering to the laws in this country? One amongst others is the procurement procedures. Secondly, the basic conditions of employment, actually, and black economic empowerment. Because it's through this that we'll be able to achieve our portion or our section of the MDGs. And the other thing I'd like to know is what is the relationship between the MDGs and the African peer review mechanism? Is there a relationship? There is a relationship. Where do the two meet? And where do the two balance each other? Over to you, members, if there are questions and comments. Ntate Buinamo, and then Honorable Masurumule, Honorable Ollis.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for all the presenters. Page 16 of presentation reflects 497,000 job seekers. However, the pace of placing job seekers in real jobs, rather than merely referring them for career guidance, unemployment insurance fund and compensation fund, appears to be very, very slow. Now, my question here is, what are your challenges in this regard? That's the only question I have. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. There's something which was said with regard to, you would appreciate the difficulty of my understanding of English because it's my second language. What is the difference between top and senior management? What does that mean? Top and senior, I'm missing something. It's English. Secondly, were you given a specific area as a country with regard to labor matters as a country by the international bodies because of your capacity, your capability, even if the challenges are too huge? for your own country as a department. Were you given specific area on behalf of Africa as a continent, taking into consideration the fact that South Africa is now represented in the Security Council by South Africa. Were you given specific area to concentrate on? I'm looking here at the continent as basically is a rural continent. Is there a specific area that you are given to concentrate on, given your capacity as a country by international bodies? That will be my only two questions for the day.
I'm the chairperson. You must speak. If you don't speak, then I will pass.
Acting chairperson, I'll gladly speak. Or is it the secret chief whip? Brilliant wonder. Thank you. I just want to address this whole question that my colleague started talking about of the employment services, because there is a definite trend developing, and he pointed that out, but I have some detailed questions. Mr. Moritoba made a comment, which I didn't quite understand because I don't have the background, something about the state attorneys have advised with the negotiation of the new employment, the public employment services, that something must be moved to higher education and something must be kept in labor. Can you just give us a little detail there, because I don't quite understand what that means. Does that mean that the draft Public Employment Services Bill is going to be shifted to a new department? Or, because I didn't quite understand. I'm sure there's an explanation. I just didn't understand that. If he could just explain that, because it is quite complicated and it's an important thing. And then, you know, in terms of this Employment Services of South Africa, that's the baby we have now. Now we're trying to create a much bigger thing, which we could call the Public Employment Services, and that's the draft bill that's either at NEDLAC or still in the department being drafted and redrafted, and I don't know where we are in that process because I'm not a member of NEDLAC. But it's problematic, and the reason that it's such a problem for the Democratic Alliance is because we can't get the Employment Services, the ESSA, to deliver on lots of job placements now. And I can't see how, if we have new legislation and a bigger department with more staff, it's going to get any better. And the figures tell us that story again. In fact, yesterday in my speech, it sounds like I was a bit too generous, because yesterday I said there were 7,800 placed. But if you look, the jobs that were registered, according to this, was 497,714 job seekers. Then we say 401,479 were referred for all these different things: career guidance, work placement, unemployment insurance fund, compensation fund, and skills. All of that is counseling, advice, training, all sorts of other things. And then when you turn over the page, you finally find the real number. The real number. The real number is 7,324 job opportunities were filled, unless I'm misreading this presentation. But what this presentation says is out of 400,000, you know, 497,714 people, we put 7,324 in actual full-time employment, and the rest we referred for something: training, education, career guidance, something else. It's not a real job. The only real jobs were 7,324. And I've asked questions of the minister in writing, written questions, which the new DG won't know about yet because he's only just started with us. But my questions are about that, and the minister has not answered yet. It's been quite a while, it's more than a month, maybe 2 months, and the minister hasn't answered the question. And my question is, the rest of the so-called placements, how many of those were temporary Public Works Department jobs? How many of those were guidance and other things? And how many were real, full-time, actual jobs? According to this presentation, it's only 7,324, which is unwillingly the tiny, tiny percentage. And that's the reason that we believe quite strongly that the new Public Employment Services Bill is going to fail, because it's very difficult for government to try and act as an employment agency. Now, the politics, I don't expect you to, as department heads, to answer, because we have lots of politicians, and the politician over there is going to, you know, hit me on the head and tell me that I don't understand ANC policy. But the numbers, I would like an answer from the department, because the politics will get answered over here. But the actual numbers are much more important. The numbers, I need to know if I'm understanding correctly. Have we placed 7,324 people in actual jobs? The rest of the 497,000, therefore, are being helped in other ways, but don't have a real job. And could Mr. Moratoba please explain what he means when he says that the state law advisors have advised a different path? What exactly is that for the employment services legislation? Are they moving it to higher education? He said splitting it into two, and I don't know what's being split. I don't quite understand that. If he could please explain that to me so I understand what is being split. Thank you. Acting chairperson.
No, just the chairperson. I'm not acting. I'm the chairperson. I will only act if the chairperson is here. Thank you very much. Thanks for the presentation. I think let me start by appreciating the fact that in 2009, right about August, September, October, somewhere there, in the Portfolio Committee Strategy Workshop, the department indicated that there are sectors where you need to have sectoral determinations, contract screening, and civil engineers. So I can see in the report, really, that did happen. I think that's good work. That's one way of assisting vulnerable workers, because without a sectoral determination, those workers who are very weak, who might not even allowed one way or the other to belong to trade unions, their conditions of employment will not be improved. But then through the Department of Labor, I think that's well done. That's the first point. The second point is that these meetings, the portfolio committee meetings where the department normally reports on progress on matters that were supposed to be attended to by the department, they also assist in for politicians to check their understanding of issues. Correct me if I'm wrong. The Skills Development Act, in fact, training has been taken to higher education and training. But within the Act itself, there is a section that deals with employment services. And now the employment services, which is in terms of the Skills Development Act, has not been taken over to higher education and training. It has left with the Department of Labor. That's what I think is supposed to be, but I'm raising it for you to correct me. That's one point. Then the Public Employment Services becomes the new bill. It's the new bill, which is in neglect as we speak. It's one of the four bills which the minister spoke about yesterday, which we are waiting as politicians for that process to come to Parliament and politic on those bills. But now it's still under discussions at deadlock. That's my understanding. Now, the job seekers that you take care of as the Department of Labor in the 125 labor centers that you have is to say, here as a Department of Labor, we have so many people who are looking for employment. Please, employers, you are not obliged. There's no law that says you must come to us. It's only when the Public Employment Services becomes an act. But for now, these are the people that we have with these different skills. So if you look for people, come to us, then we'll assist you on that. So the Department of Labor does not have factories where workers are retrenched from a particular retail, and then when they register with the Department of Labor, and the Department of Labor will say, no, because we have job with you, because we've got a company somewhere, we're going to place you there. It depends on the employers to approach the department in order for you, for those individuals to be placed. So I thought it's important for me to raise this in order to for us to be clarified. The last point, which has got nothing to do with you as the department, is about when the supporting staff were introducing themselves. We've got whips. There's one chief whip and a deputy chief whip. The chief whip of the ANC is Comrade Matola Musaka. The deputy chief whip is Makwanis, Bulelani Makwanis. Baba Lua was saying she is the secretary to the whip, which is Buti Manamela. So I also want you to know that we've got a whip that called Buti Manamela. If they don't have a whip with DA, what they've got is shadow ministers. It's Tunzi, you see. Like all you see, it's this Tunzi. The chairperson has arrived. He's busy with his tea, but I think let me hand over to the department because he's still not yet occupied his seat.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think in the process of some of the comments that have been made, there is probably some element of an attempt to clarify some of the issues. But I would ask Mr. Mo Rotoba to, you know, to also deal with some of the questions, particularly those relating to the issue of job seekers, placements, and so it goes. Please do.
Thanks, DG. Maybe let me deal with the first question. I think Honorable Nyakemba has clarified the issue of the bills because there is a law governing the current employment services. And maybe just to clarify what the state law advisors have done and what is in the current Skills Development Act. We had a Career Guidance and Placement Act, which was integrated in the Skills Development Act. The Career Guidance and Placement Act of 1981 was then repealed in year 1998. Then there is a whole chapter dealing with employment services within the Skills Development
Productivity SA, and so on. Those are in the current act. What the state law advisors did to assist the department after the proclamation by the president of the transfer of function, because the president basically transferred certain functions in the act to the Department of Higher Education and retained certain functions within the Department of Labor, and some functions remain with the Department of National Treasury. For instance, the Skills Development Levies Act remains in the Treasury Act and in the Treasury, and it has not been affected because that's a tax. So what the state law advisors have done was to craft out those sections of employment services that are in the current Skills Development Act to make them a stand-alone act, and in the process enhance that section so that it becomes a stand-alone act. I guess the rest, I think, is what Honorable Nyakemba clarified. Now, there was a question on some of the real challenges around the placement that was asked. Now, I think from the large number of people registered, the biggest challenge is that the majority of those people have low skills. And that is the major problem. The jobs that are there, in some cases, you open newspapers, etc. On one hand, you have a lot of jobs that are available that require a certain levels of skills. On the other hand, you have a lot of people that are looking for jobs that are not necessarily having the skills required. And this speaks to the mismatch that has been that has characterized and contributed to the problems of what some people call low skills, you know, large number of jobs and the matching part. So you still have that problem, and that problem is not unique to South Africa, and it's caused by technological changes and a whole range of things. From the time you start training a person until the person graduates, the jobs that you are training that person for have, in terms of its content and a number of things, changed. And therefore, it makes the person being trained to consistently require additional skills, and hence we have that problem. But I think the other thing is that there are, in some instances, few jobs that are available to accommodate the large number of people with low skills. And in some cases, we also have a challenge in that the Department of Labor used to run a very, very huge training program, especially targeting the unemployed. It was basically a skills program that taught people things like paving, carpeting, painting, all those things. They were not real training programs per se, but those programs with the transfer has been discontinued, and as a result, you have a large number of people still believing that they should be assisted, because the sooner you have actually provided a person with those kind of bricklaying skills, a number of people will easily get a job, or they will start their own self-employment scheme that allow them to get an income, which in turn assisted them to survive. Obviously, there are a number of there are also other issues that I must highlight. In working with Home Affairs, we have found that a number of companies will advertise or come to the department and register opportunities, but they are not genuine in terms of accepting people that we refer to them. And the reason is simply because they want to bypass the system to bring in people either from Zimbabwe, from Malawi, and all that, with the intention of getting work permits. And that has been a big issue and a big fight that ourselves, Home Affairs, has been working with a number of companies. You may have seen with the World Cup stadiums and all that, where ourselves and Home Affairs will go to companies and say, these are the opportunities you have registered with the department. These are the people that can do those jobs, and you need to provide reasons. And one of the reasons for tightening that aspect in the bill is to try and close some of those gaps, because a large number of companies will say, we are in need of these people. You submit people, but for reasons known to those companies, they don't employ those people because they want the government to issue work permits so that they can bring in people across the whole world when we have high levels of unemployment locally. And I think that is the phenomenon that we're trying to address. The other element has to do with the unemployment insurance fund linkages, because the issue that we are also trying to address here is that there are people, the reason why a person who resigns from the work cannot be eligible for unemployment insurance fund was to try and deal with those people who would simply walk away from job. It was a big issue before, but I think we managed to lessen the number of people claiming UI, because if you resign, you can't get UIF. But the other issue that is emerging is that there will be people who are retrenched, and those people who are retrenched, they are eligible for UI. But if there is a job that matches that person's skills, currently you cannot force them to take on that job. And the intention is to try and make sure that if there is a job available, and the person who is on the unemployment insurance fund queues has those skills, you are able to say, in the light of the jobs available, in the light of the skills available, we are placing you in that job, and if the company says no, then they have to provide reasons. And currently we don't have that mechanism, and that is amongst the challenges that are in there. There was a question around the if I can just deal with it with the issue of the numbers, the question of placement. Now, I did indicate the challenges, but also on the placement, yes, the number records 7,300. Those are the people who are formally placed on permanent jobs. But placement is broadly defined, because placement does not necessarily mean that a person is in. Yes, of course, if we can have more people in formal jobs, that will be much better. And you did, I think the honorable member did always raise the question around the breakdown of temporary, etc. The bulk of the large number of people with low skills, some without metrics, which are not reported, they are being placed in jobs. But in most cases, it will be jobs like those in the EPWP, which are 3 months jobs in working for water projects, jobs in the various municipalities, and so on, that we did not report to. But those are jobs that are assisting our people at the end of the week to get an income that makes them to survive. Maybe we short reported by only citing those that are in permanent jobs, but we do have information around people that are being put in other areas. Some people come because they don't have information, and in the process of career counseling, it is in that process that you realize that this person has 80% of skills in this particular area, and they require only 20% to be referred to training so that they can then achieve a full trade status to become an artisan. And those people are being assisted, and they are going in those areas. And the 7,000 number, whilst it may look low in relation to the 4,000 numbers registered in the fourth quarter, but I think if it comes to placement, and if you take the broader definition of placement in opportunities that arise,
we believe that if you are able to get those in permanent jobs and if we have the cooperation of employers, that number may look small, but it is a huge achievement. And with the as we get our IT systems right for people to look for these jobs on their own on our SR system, and for employers to look for people that they need on the systems, we believe that in the long run we will improve. DG, there was also a question around the specific contribution of the department, and I think the DG did indicate this issue that the contribution of South Africa to the Millennium Development Goal is a broader issue. We were only, in terms of the country program, without precluding us to also contribute to the other. We are asked as part of other departments to contribute to Millennium Development Goal number one as the Department of Labor. But our reports in terms of other MDGs are actually accepted. And I think the comments from the chairperson around working with the other departments, I think those are welcome, because Millennium Development Goals, like we said, we contribute towards those as South Africa, and South Africa consists of a number of components at national, at provincial, and at local level. And it is the total combination of all those that, as we get our stats right, that we can then check as to how are we making a difference. And I think there was another other question.
Chair, Honorable Chair, there were also three other broader questions. Do foreign companies that come into South Africa comply with our laws? The answer would be yes. But I think we should also deal with that question in relation to some of the reports that either have been brought forward before this committee, and the statistics also provided in terms of the level of compliance. I think the Minister referred to the issue of compliance with regards to applicable labor legislation and so forth in her speech yesterday. So I think that would be the one straight answer. The answer that would be somewhat difficult, precisely because I'm no specialist in this area, I would put it that way. The relationship between your Millennium Development Goals and the African peer review mechanisms, I would only just suppose, and that's simply purely a supposition, that there has to be a relation between the two. Your African peer review mechanism also talking to the Millennium Development Goals. But in terms of the specific detail as to what are those points of connection, really, I think it would require some further work on that one, Chair. The question about what is the difference between top and senior management, I think the honourable member says it's English. But basically, in the exercise of out there, in the convention has it, in the corporate world, if I may put it that way, to try and respond to that answer, I think top will refer to your executives, if I may put it that way. Yes, you know, chief executive officers and whatever. Senior then, you know, in essence, will relate to the layer or second line of management, the one next to the top, I suppose. And then you have your middle layer management and, you know, functional areas and so forth, line function management areas further down and so forth. I think it's just simply how, generally speaking, the corporate sort of frame and ladder is somewhat designed. That was my best attempt to this question, Chair. Thanks. Mr. Kessler just wants to...
to that, in the Employment Equity Act and its regulations, in the regulations particularly, the there is a regulation that sets out the manner in which companies must report. We then have these occupational categories, which starts with top management, senior management, professionally qualified, skilled and technical, and you go down. So that's the breakdown, and that is why we use the terms here, top and senior. In the Department of Labor, you will recall at the stage we call chief directors senior executive managers. We now reverted that to calling them chief directors again. Now, the distinction there has been, it's been assumed that DDGs are top management, senior executive manager or chief directors and directors are your senior management. And that is why in the public service you have this term SMS, senior management service. So that starts with the director, chief director, deputy director general, and director general. So it's the categories of occupations that employers are obliged to report on when they submit the employment equity reports. And it's in that context that we raise the term top and senior around the employment equity issue. Thank you, Chair.
We have this thing of if a company says no, you have to provide reasons. Is Mr. Muratoba saying that we're going to enforce that, that we're going to require companies to provide reasons? Because that's very, very interesting. And he also spoke about in the construction industry and other places, companies have been bringing in foreigners. When there are local people available, that they've gone and done inspections with Home Affairs, and they've provided also lists of people who are skilled or semi-skilled and are available, but companies, for example, building the football stadia and so on, have brought foreigners in for some other reason. Now, I want to also dig into that a little bit. What would be the motivation for a company to bring a foreign person in when it's complicated, it's expensive, you've got to apply for visas, there's time delays, you've got lots of drama? Why would a Zimbabwean person or a Swazi person or a Mozambican person or a United States person be brought in when there are local people with the skills? And I can only think of one of two answers. The one answer is that there is a set of specialist skills. So that in some cases there will be a skill, like an engineer is a rare expert. So if you're building a train like the Gautrain and you need a certain kind of railway engineer, we haven't built train lines in South Africa since 1973, so we have lost some of that expertise. So that's one I can understand, and we would accept that. If you have to bring an expert for a technical thing, sometimes you just have to do that because there's a scarce skill. However, if it's not the case, which is what Mr. Muratoba seems to be indicating, then it would mean that there's some financial reason, because a company wouldn't go to all that trouble if there wasn't a reason. Are we saying that companies are bringing in Zimbabweans and Mozambican citizens because it's cheaper, they're paying them lower wages, therefore South Africans, the wages are too high, therefore the Zimbabweans are cheaper to employ to the company? Is that what's going on? Because he seems to be indicating that. Perhaps you can clarify just those two things for me.
Do I see another hand?
Yes, sir.
You see, I like to speak after all this. No, you don't. You don't. You.
I'm also a selective chef.
No, you are not here because I was.
sometimes the whatever SDA is, it's not ANC. And DA was formed after 1994, anyway. Democratic Alliance, after 1994, it was the National Party and the Democratic Party. And then they formed Democratic Alliance after 1994, not 1959. Yeah, sir, the point here, Mr. Kedudas, when you were dealing with contribution to employment creation, the skilled and semi-skilled and unskilled workers were in average, in terms of wage increases, they received 9%, all of them, which then make it difficult now in closing the wage gap, because one of the that's why there was employment equity anyway. It's also there in order to close the gap that exists between categories. I think then, if we will find situations where things happen as they did, it will then point to the Department of Labor, in particular, the Inspectorate Enforcement Services. But I know that the minister spoke about this yesterday, and we used to talk about it, the professionalization of inspectors, because you can't keep them. They come and get knowledge and leave. So I'm just raising it. They might not necessarily respond now, but I'm saying it's an area which we are aware they are dealing with, but it looks like it's not yielding results as we expect, because we can't continue having the gap between skilled, semi-skilled, and unskilled workers. I just wanted to raise that point. The last one is I think it's the point that Honorable Ollis raised. I just want to clear my mind, you see, because I don't want to assume that I understood what was said differently, or I understood it the same. I always want to check. For Murotoba, Mr. Murotoba, to mention the Department of Home Affairs, that was linked to placement. When companies approach a labor center in a particular area, only to find out that company already has foreign workers. Now, they are using the system that is existing now in order for them, as employers, to get work permits for the foreign workers that they already have. I'll tell you why I'm thinking this this way, and you must correct me. Because my experience is that you will find a situation where, because I used to be a union official, so recruiting workers, you'll find a situation where workers cannot join the trade union. One, they don't have IDs, and they are told that should they join the union, they will lose employment, and only to find out that these are foreign workers whom those companies do not even deduct unemployment insurance for them.
There are no statutory deductions that are taking place. So that in order for those employers to keep those workers, they will in a way try to pretend as if they work with the Department of Labor looking for people, but in the process change. I think correct me if I understood you differently, Mr. Mrotoma.
Thanks, Honorable Nyegem. I just want to comment a little bit on the question, Honorable Olis, even though the question is referred to. I think it belongs to all of us to answer. And then from there we'll see which one makes sense to all of us from the all different answers given. The question, a business, let's start there. People go into business not because they want to create jobs. They go into business not because they want to help people to have a better life. Or even to help the poor to get jobs. They are in business because they want to make profit. And you cannot make profit without the workers. So they are a necessary evil that you need to go with to make that profit. And if this necessary evil that you cannot do away with or wish away, and it so happens that there's a chance that with the opportunities, for instance, in the outside environment, even without outside your country, where there are very vulnerable workers, semi-skilled and unskilled, who are willing to get into any job without even asking how much are they going to earn, because this is what is happening with most of our brothers from Zimbabwe and Mozambique and other neighboring states who come to the New Jerusalem, because South Africa is seen as that. You don't have to go to America. There's no difference between us and America in terms of infrastructure. Actually, we even have the best infrastructure, more than America's in some respects. So there's no need to go into a boat and, stow away and go to America when you can just walk across the border and you look like the people in that country. So it makes it easier. You can't be detected from a distance until somebody greets you. Then it makes it much more easier for anyone who wants to make profit that you'll go for these people who are so vulnerable that they don't even want to ask how much am I going to earn. And they work, and you tell them, I'm going to pay you next month. For this month, I'll give you some millimeal and this, and then you'll get a tent as shelter. I'm telling you, you're going to get something big after 2 months. That person will smile, hoping that, that better thing will come after 2 months. But I'm just saying that these are the kind of people we're talking about. The companies will go out of their way to get the cheapest labor that is not even registered. People are not even known. Even their families don't know where they are. So if they die, you can turn them into compost. As it happened in Bethel, and other places, in the 50s, where people were used as manure in the in the potato plantations, potato fields. So definitely, any industrialist will go for those people. That even if they are injured, you give them a Dettol and go wash yourself, and then you can rest for two days. And I want to at work the following day, and they'll limp on into the factory and do their utmost best. And any industrialist, any capitalist would be very happy that, today this year was a very good year. We didn't even have to pay UIF for, an injuries contributions to this and that. But I think there will be other instances where because of the skills needed, like you said, Honorable Ollie, is that we never laid a railway line since 1973, and that those skills are lost. There will be need, for instance, to get those skills from somewhere into South Africa, because we cannot do without them, or the industrialists cannot do without them, because without those skills, they are not going to be able to complete their projects, and so therefore they won't be paid if the projects are not completed. So this thing is always focused on the one who is making profit. But there is the question, the high level of political consciousness of generally South African population. We are a very political community, society. And that it's not very easy for any South African to jump on any South African worker's head. It's difficult because they won't bend for you. So the best thing is, rather than look for skilled people in South Africa, you rather look for those skilled ones who are from outside, who won't even know the language spoken in the country. So it will be very difficult. That I can imagine Nyakemba as a unionist organizing somebody from Poland who speaks Polish and Russian and some little German. So this person is going to stay out of the labor movement for at least more than a year without anyone feeling guilt. The unions will understand, no, when he understands English, will organize him. But that year will be a very good year for the Indians. I'll say, I mean, there's so much anecdotal evidence that we can give in explaining, in trying to answer or clarify. Why do I keep on wanting to say Reverend Ollie's? Honorable Ollie's? No, because you see, I think that the DA will be the party that will understand how the social system works, because you are so married to capitalism that if things goes bad, you can even go to war to defend it. Some of us will too, you know, but I thought you'll be the vanguard of that struggle to keep capitalism alive and kicking. Some of us still have dreams of a socialist South Africa in our lifetime. Now I'll give over to the department, because we can talk on this topic forever and ever until the cows come home. Thanks.
No, thanks, Che. There is much really that we can say around this problematic. Safe to say that, you know, we think that it's a matter that would need closer sort of monitoring and study continuously on an ongoing basis as to what are the developing sort of trends, tendencies, and so on that would inform, for an example, the issue of the companies that would want to bring in foreign labor and so forth. What are the issues there? So it's good that my suspicion, Chair, is that it is very likely that you'll come up with a mixed bag of reasons as to why. I think we just have a duty to ensure that on our side we begin to, no, not that we begin, that we continue to study trends around that particular matter. Thank you very much, Chair.
Honourable, I think what we need to do with this theme of foreign workers, it has raised its ugly head just some 2 weeks ago in Limpopo at Medupi station. Now those people who are working now there are working under police guard, and which is not a very health environment for anyone. You know what the kind of tension that it can cause. And these tensions, when workers are faced with tensions, they take the tension out on other people. You know, the dogs and cats and children at home. So the sooner we clear this matter, the better. And I think what will be helpful is if we can engage as a committee with the Committee on Home Affairs, so that we tighten this, the loose screws, and people can help us with more information about this. It's your good selves, TG, and your team, in terms of what are those things that are worrying you, and how are these things affecting the people who matter most to us as the Department of Labor? Because we said as the Department of Labor, we should always emerge as people on the side of the underdogs. And the underdogs here, they being people at the receiving end, being the workers, and particularly the unskilled or underskilled or semi-skilled workers. We are not only dealing with matters of labor, but again we deal with matters related to the captains of industry, that in this relationship they should try and treat workers fairly and give South African workers opportunities that actually belongs to them. They should not rob them of those opportunities that are created by this democratic government. And that does not only, it goes on also even into matters related to cross-border trade, because this affects South African workers. And if we say they should be ensuring that there is adherence to the laws that work in this, that, you know, laws that operate in the country, this will also go for black economic empowerment processes with those companies that are coming in the country. They need to benefit South African workers, and again benefit South African business people. Thanks. I think the, unless if there's anything that any other member would like to say before we move on to the second item on the agenda. Honorable Ollis.
Chairperson, you didn't give an opportunity for anybody to answer my question about Mr. Maratoba's statement. If a company says no, you have to give reasons why you didn't employ that person.
No.
Nobody answered that question.
This question needs to be answered. Mr. Maratoba, sir.
Yes. Honorable Chairperson, I think when the bill is in Parliament, because now we that aspect is one of the things that are in the bill, and the bill is still before NEDLAC. I would request that maybe the question be deferred. But the issue is precisely around the same issue that you are raising. Government may have given this company X to build a road, and they need excuse. They are provided with the people, and the company says no, I don't want them, and they want to X from somewhere, and without reason. Therefore, the simple issue, I think, what has been proposed in the bill is that Home Affairs should not grant the work permit. That's what the short answer is. But Chairperson, just a small contribution that I'm sure honourable members, as part of the parliamentarians, we in the across the SADC region, we in the Ministry of Labour, and together with other ministers of labour, the trade unions and employers within the SADC region, we do meet to discuss matters of this nature. And the last session was in Namibia. And the reason why we meet to discuss matters of this nature is precisely because we are members of the international community. Most of you will be going to the ILO in June. And the reason why we go to the ILO is because we acknowledge the fact that we are all members of the international community, where we are supposed to work together to deal with matters affecting vulnerable workers. And I think whilst I cited those problems, within the forums that we meet with the regional governments of the SADC communities, we're trying by all means to address those problems. at stopping the abuse of workers, irrespective of whether South African going to Zimbabwe and getting abused in Zimbabwe or in Botswana and vice versa. In the eyes of the international community or in the ILO and so on, we will have failed to put in measures that are in line with the conventions. And the conventions are basically there to assist us to say what are the international best practices that we must implement to stamp out the abuse of workers irrespective of their country of origin. Thanks.
Honorable Ellis, I think the first answer to the question is that this matter will be dealt with when we deal with the new legislation in terms of definitions, because anything that Morodova says will be used against him in the court of law. As they say when they arrest you, anything you say will be used against you. So I think we've come to the end of the first item on the agenda. I suggest that we take a 10-minute break to allow for those other people to come in so that we can make a quorum to adopt the minutes of the last meeting. You are part of those adoption of the minutes because you have been part of this meeting, so you should be part of the adoption of the minutes. So don't go. These are not just our minutes. They are minutes of the committee. You belong to the committee. Let's take that 10-minute tea break. Lufo, would you? The line, Shelley, and Honorable Little. Are you going to miss your flight?
No.
Nana, are you going to miss your flight? Those. That's it. Okay, I can give you my broom after this. So.
Hi, I'm Chris Jones with Parliamentary Matters. What's your name?
George.
With DA?
With DA, yes. I don't
know. Yeah, I'm working here with PMG for the summer. I'm in law school back in the U.S.
Oh, how long are you here?
2 months. Not long.
And then you will be in the
next. And then I go back in August and I start class again. Yeah.
What's your office?
We're just off on St. John's, right across the road, in the magazine building.
Okay.
Is there any chance I could get a lunch appointment with you sometime?
Yeah.
Love to pick your brain.
Today's
the 25th.
Wednesday.
Maybe they'll rush next week sometime, maybe? Yeah. Should I just send you an email?
Cameras, let me just see if sometimes my writing is not very
George. Sure. Awesome.
Sure.
Nice to meet you, sir.
Thank you. Thank you. You want to go out and get
No, 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 no
I think we should get seated and continue with the second part of the meeting, minus the department. We, in the last meeting, was it the 12th of April? There were two pair of minutes. Oh, these two sets of minutes. Did I say pair? Okay, two